Gear Patrol just called their ISO-certified dive watch the best sub-$500 dive watch. Full stop. And their ceramic watch material almost magical. The Wall Street Journal called them iconoclastic cool, potentially redefining the industry itself. Who are we talking about? It's Movement. And they're leveling up your gift-giving with the biggest deals of the holiday season and the sleekest watches around. Shop 30 to 60% off Movement's variety of designs, colorways, and functionalities. From the thinnest automatic dress watch under $500 to waterproof guarantee adventure-ready sport watches to rare ceramics, Movement's got options for everyone on your list. Whether you're gifting for family, friends, or yourself, be the good gifter this year with Movement's huge site-wide holiday sales and enjoy the usual fast and free shipping. Shop 30 to 60% off now at movement.com. That's MVMT.com.
Save big on your Thanksgiving feast, all in the Kroger app. Buy two, get three free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up with your card. Then get a juicy frozen grade A Kroger turkey for 49 cents a pound, limit one with a $25 additional purchase with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to Board Gamers Anonymous, the podcast of board gamers and the insane fun we have at the table together. This is Chris.
This is Anthony.
This is Corey.
And this is Harrison.
And this is episode 502, Our Friends' Favorite Games, Adamantly Analog Podcast. We'd like to thank all our Patreon backers for helping us bring you a special episode, but our new producers, Scott, Ian, Lucy, and John upgraded to digital. Thanks so much, everyone. You rock. All right, everyone. We're back, and we have a great episode. We just finished the top 100, the top 500 episodes of all time. So we wanted to top the top of the top by bringing you some of our great friends out there, listeners, and now podcasters. Corey?
Yeah, this is awesome. I have been listening for years, and you guys are impressively reaching the 500 mark, the illustrious 500 pinnacle of podcasting. This is amazing. Thank you for what you've brought to the community and what you guys have done for, my board gaming shelf. It's much bigger because of you guys. Thank you for that.
So you're saying thank you.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm proud of it.
we've gotten both. Yeah, like, thanks, guys.
Yeah, you know.
Oh. Yeah. Hello. Hi. I was looking for the pass and it just went over my head, I think. Hi, everyone. I'm looking forward to recording with you guys today. And I think I'll have lots to learn. I might have to review my shelf after this and going back and re-listening to some old episodes.
Well, other than just enticing you all to purchase endless numbers of games for an endless collection that will lead to endless gaming out there, tell us a little bit about your podcast.
Yeah, so we started this over the summer, but it was a project a couple years in the making, because I think I reached out to Harrison, I don't know, maybe 2 years ago, right? I said, hey, you want to do a board game podcast? We're both college friends, but we've since moved to separate towns in Wisconsin, and we're, you know, about an hour between us. And I don't know, I'd been doing a Magic the Gathering podcast for years and had a lot of fun with that. We did some 200 episodes of that one. I was like, you know what? I don't really play Magic anymore, but I do have a lot of energy for board games. And so I had to put that someplace, because, you know, you can't always sit down and play the board games. So sometimes you always sit down and you buy the board games, but I decided we're going to talk about the board games. And so here we are. We're like 25 episodes in, and we're having a lot of fun doing it.
That's awesome. Yeah. Go ahead, please, Harrison.
Yeah, on my end, the podcasting bug is very fresh and new. Corey roped me into this finally after nearly 2 years of trying to get me to say yes. I'm loving it. I have just as much energy and love for the hobby, but I've been channeling that into creating other games and designing games and developing games. So I started in getting really into the industry by demoing for various publishers at like Gen Con and PAX, and just came up through that route and started doing development work on upcoming games. And now I work for Thunderworks Games as their in-house developer.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. Like, okay. So anything in particular you've worked on that you're like particularly proud of?
Yes, but none of it's come out yet. So
okay.
Right around not quite that secret. Citizens of the Spark that just wrapped up on Kickstarter is going to be the first one that I will have had a very strong influence on. So for better or for worse.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's a great thing about the hobby. There's so many different roles and positions and opportunities to contribute. It's still a very small industry. And that lets you really get one-on-one with people and the games that we play.
Yeah, absolutely. And me, I'm just a regular guy. Harrison's the professional here. I'm just a guy that plays games, but aren't we all, right?
Well, you survived Magic, which is just an amazing thing. Because I don't think anyone goes into that, especially 200 episodes in, and gets out alive, or at least without, you know, their bank accounts, their house going on, being mortgaged, their car being repossessed.
You know, that was a big factor for getting out of the game. It was just the intense pressure to update and purchase cards and things like that. And it was just such an expensive hobby. And I decided to pick a different expensive hobby. But this this one's a little more welcoming in a lot of ways.
Got more of a natural cap to it. Yeah.
Yeah.
I walked my son through the CCG landscape just the last few months because he discovered Star Wars Unlimited at PAX last year. And he's like, I love this game. We have to get it. So I got him, you know, a starter kit and a couple booster packs. And at a certain point, he's like, why can't I use this card? Why isn't there an Obi-Wan? Why isn't there, you know, these characters I like? I'm like, oh, because it's collectible card game. He's like, what does that mean? I'm like, well, you have to go buy the packs and they might have the cards you want, but they probably don't. Or you could go buy the cards. And then if you want to have a good deck, you got to get all the good cards. But he's like, this is stupid. I don't like this. I was like, it's fair. It's fair.
Sounds
it's
like
very
a good
addictive,
egg.
Though. So be careful.
Yeah.
But, how are you feeling, Corey, about what Magic's doing these days with all the new IPs popping up and the changes?
Oh my gosh, I can't keep up with it. But honestly, it was inevitable. I think there's a lot of pressure to kind of expand from you know the already very large world that it was. But it's you know I'm apathetic about it at this point. I'm kind of disconnected from it. But sure. I know people that are in Magic have a lot of strong opinions about whether or not Fortnite should be included in their game.
Oof.
Yeah, that's the whole thing.
Yeah, they made so much money off that Lord of the Rings set. They're gonna ride that all the way home now.
You know, speaking of that though, like we kind of get this in board gaming too, because we have our Seven Wonders Duel and we now have the Seven Wonders Lord of the Rings version, and I'm hearing that's awesome. So let's bring it on. Let's do it.
Yeah, I hear that a lot from the publishers. Their dream is if they can get a design that they can infinitely reproduce and reskin. And it kind of makes sense because then they can grab the IPs for some additional money and some larger crowds. But in the end, just like what happened with Seamon and their Terranoff universe, is that like when you bring the IPs in, then what happens to the original content that you created and developed all those years? Like, why would you now buy Magic cards with the original Pantheon when you can get Lord of the Rings or you can get Marvel or anything else? So it's a challenge for sure.
But here we are, though, with our original version of Castles of Burgundy and upgrading to the new version and then the new version. And, you know, it's the same thing. It's what do we do with those old copies? You know, I hope someone can still find joy in playing the game for its mechanics and not all the bling that goes along with it.
Hear, hear. Yeah, it's it's too much. And it feels wasteful at a certain point. Like I'm definitely reaching that point of like, I don't really want to keep upgrading what I have because.
Sure.
It's cool, but then what do you do with the old stuff? Nobody wants it. Is it going to get played? Where is it going? How much stuff do you really need?
Yeah, you don't want the new version with actual castles comes with it?
Ooh, well, actually, now that you mention it.
Sold!
That's where I drew the line, by the way. I've got it right on my shelf, but I cut off before the actual castles.
Yeah, same. Yeah, I was like, I'll take the tiles. Do not give me the miniatures.
Yeah.
I just found out that there's the Board Game Geek hosts a thrifty Secret Santa every year. And that's a great way to pass on all those duplicate games or ones that you don't play anymore. So I'm looking to thin out the shelf even more right now.
Absolutely. All right, everyone. Well, we have so much to talk about on this episode, and we're so glad for our friends to join us here this week. But before we get into all that fun stuff, let's talk about all of our other friends out there that are listening right now. Let's talk about our question of the week.
All right, folks. So the question of the week was very simple this week, mostly because we spent the last 13 weeks running through our Hall of Fame and our top 100 and then the listeners' top 100. And we did play games in there.
We did?
Sometimes.
It's a blur. Yeah.
Occasionally we played games.
We did.
And now we have to talk about them. So we're now at the point where we have to bring those out. We're going to talk about those. So I want to know what everybody else thought. Like, what are some of your favorite games, new to you or new in general? Most people chose new in general, from the last 3 months. Mm-hmm. So a lot of good answers here. Just kind of rattle them off real quick. Michael over on the Patreon says River Valley Glassworks. So it says each player collects glass pieces on their turn and places them in a scoring structure. Easy to teach and a quick game. Also mentions Lure and Nunatak, Temple of Ice, which I've not heard of, but it's a 3D construction game with set collection. So you're building a Temple of Ice. That sounds cool to me.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a new Kane Klinko.
Oh, I didn't know it's Klinko. That's cool. I'll have to track that down. Okay, that's awesome. John, who recently upgraded on our Patreon, he said Sea Salt and Paper. Finally got a chance to play that.
Nice. Love that game.
Chris, you like that one, right?
I do a lot. Little tiny game. Super, super tiny game.
Yeah. He also mentions Worms the board game. Didn't know that was a board game, but seems like it could work.
I think that might have been a crowdfunding thing way back when. I think I remember seeing that, actually, because I was a fan of the video game way back in the day.
Yeah, yeah, I remember the video game.
Like way back in the day. They dug that one up. No pun intended there.
30 years ago, 35?
Yeah.
Ryan says Black Forest. So a new Uwe game with dual resource wheels. Love it. More Glass Road-ish game. As well as Fromage and Endeavor Deep Sea.
Sure.
So I didn't know Endeavor Deep Sea was actually out. So I'm looking forward to getting that played soon.
Mm-hmm.
Nick says Black Forest as well. Age of Rail, South Africa. Age of Rail games are great. So it's cool to see new maps there. And then Lord of the Rings Duel for Middle Earth, which we obviously agree because Chris and I, at least, we both put that on our top 100. And then Drew mentions Demacher, not new at all, but finally got a chance to play it, which I respect and understand because I've had this game for years and I've never played it. So it's interesting choice at the time that we're all living in to dive into a political game. I feel like I'm done with all that, but that's what Drew got to the table. Over on the Facebook page, and that was all on the Patreon page. So over on the Facebook page, we have another 20 or so comments. I'm not going to read them all off, but just a few more games people mentioned. Darwin's Journey. We have Heat, Bonsai, Windmill Valley. Windmill Valley is one I'm going to talk about here in a couple weeks. Andromeda's Edge, SETI, the new one from TGE, Harmonies, Gravwell is a classic game. Bringing that one back.
Oh, wow. That was Daniel's favorite game. Yeah,
I love that game. More love for Black Forest in here, Endeavor Deep Sea as well. Frozen Frontier, Age of Innovation, big hit. Sankori, Unconscious Mind. So yeah. People are out there playing games. So they didn't stop because of our talk about it.
Just give more games to play, that's all.
Right.
Yeah, I'm jealous. I definitely want to get SETI to the table. That one looks amazing and thematically really cool.
Yeah, no, when that one popped up, I was like, ooh, sci-fi. I'm like, no, not sci-fi, just science. Ooh, I love this. Definitely tracking that one down at PAX, I think.
And it's CGE. They do a really nice job with their designs.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Cool. Well, I would ask you guys the same thing, but I feel like that's what we're going to talk about soon. So we'll save that for At the Table, unless you have something else you want to talk about that you're not going to review later.
No, I think At the Table for me.
Okay.
Now, yeah. I'll echo the Patreon supporter who just played Sea Salt and Paper for the first time. Same here, just this week. Took me long enough, but I'm super, super glad to have tried it. I think I need to try it again. I don't think I got it the first time around.
It takes a couple. I can speak to that.
Did you play with the extra salt, the expansion?
I can't tell if you're making a joke.
No, it's really the expansion.
Yeah, it's just extra salt.
Extra salt. Okay.
It's true. I didn't make that up. It's actually a thing. Yeah, the expansion really lets you do not a lot of new things, just a couple that I think are essential to the gameplay. So if the first time it didn't really work for you, try the expansion with it, because it lets you do some cool things. Like, I think if you play the lobster, you can draw 5 cards. It lets you pull more meaningful combos, and that's really fun.
Okay.
But if you ever have the opportunity of pulling 4 mermaids in a game that you're losing, you will love that game forever.
I saw 3 of 4 in one of the hands. Ooh. Yep.
Very nice.
Here's the thing, though. That game is so nice because it's this concise little box.
Yes.
And then you get the expansion. What? It's another box. It's no longer concise, right? Shuffle them all together. So, yeah, it doesn't fit in your pocket anymore.
No. And you can't sleeve those cards anyway. The box won't fit.
So, right.
Yeah, it's a bit of a challenge. It's clever. But good games.
Get you to buy another copy.
It's true. All right, so thank you all for hitting us up on Patreon, patreon.com/BGA. Does a great deal to support the podcast, get your words out there, get your games out there to everyone, get the conversation going out there. It's a big help for the podcast and for the community. And if you don't hit us up there, hit us up on Facebook. It's probably the best place to find us these days because social media is a little iffy. Facebook.com/BGA, Board Gamers Anonymous. You can answer the question of the week that Anthony posts each and every week. We would love to hear from each and every one of you out there. All right, everyone. So that's what's going on with our friends out there. Let's talk about what we want to get to the table. Let's talk about our acquisition disorders. Anthony, what do you have up this week?
All right. So I'm going to kick it off. And this will be relatively brief because there's not a ton of information about this game yet. Or at least not that I want to dive into too much. This is Revenant, which was announced a few weeks ago. This is not like super new announced, but we haven't talked about it yet. This is a new game from Mindclash Games. It's going to be up on Kickstarter sometime soon. And it is a sequel/prequel to Voidfall, which I recently just named my number one game of all time. And it is not a mechanical sequel. It's thematically a sequel. So this is a game that takes place in the Voidfall universe. And the thing about Voidfall is it's big, it's long, it's really just a lot of things going on, very crunchy. But there is a lot of lore behind it. Like, if you read through the rule book, there's stuff everywhere. The first, 4 or 5 pages is just, the backstory. Each of the factions has a backstory. There's this whole thing about, the Voidborn come through this portal, and they're destroying the Empire and these fallen houses, and you're out there as the last surviving house trying to recover and bring things back from where they came from. And so this is about kind of what happens after the Voidfall, when the Voidborn come through that dimensional portal and going off and trying to save the collected knowledge of the galaxy. So it's kind of a cool little world that they built, from a sci-fi perspective. Mm-hmm. And I love that about Mindclash, because they will expand on things, right? They took Tricarion, they turned it into an RPG. Cerebria has multiple games involved with it. Anachrony has its own little world there as well. There's always something to it. It's not just mechanics, even if it feels like it. There's a whole thing behind it. And so this game is very different, seemingly, mechanically, from Voidfall. It's 90 to 120 minutes. So it's Mindclash. I'm sure it's a little longer than that, but it's not like the 4 to 7 hours of Voidfall. Crazy. It's a worker placement game, which Voidfall is not at all. And it is strictly competitive, whereas Voidfall could be played competitive or cooperative. So mechanically, I think it's very important, and they keep saying this, it's not a sequel mechanically, it's just in that world. But I really like that world, and I like Mindclash, and I like worker placement games. So keeping my eye out for this one. I don't know when it's gonna drop. Maybe they've announced it and I just missed it. Just something that popped up on my radar a few weeks ago. But it's new Mindclash. It's in this world. It looks fun, it looks interesting, and it's gonna be probably not terribly stupidly expensive, because Mindclash usually keeps these things pretty dense, pretty condensed. So Revenant, coming next year.
Looks really cool.
Yeah, it's Morien O'Toole artwork. The cover looks amazing.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful cover.
that's enough to sell a game to me, is Ian O'Toole artwork.
Just his cover work, like the game itself, and Voidfall as a game would not work if he hadn't done the design on it. Like, there's so many icons and so much stuff to keep track of that if it didn't make sense as printed, I don't think the game could work. So he's the rock star of that game. But just like him in space, like him doing space stuff, like On Mars, Black Angel, Voidfall, just beautiful games.
Yeah, and there's something about such a wide and like dense setup that makes it feel even more immersive. It's like everywhere you look, you're still in space, you know, because it's all over the table.
Yeah, that's true. That game is sprawling. I hope this one isn't quite so sprawling, because as much as I love Voidfall, it's hard to get out. And I'm at this point, I'm like, I don't think I'm going to make anybody play this.
Like, yeah,
if they make me teach it. But
well, yeah. I gotta ask about Voidfall. You scared me a little bit with the hour and a half setup time on that one, and I want to play this game desperately. I've even heard it's good solo. But that said, that's a pretty big hurdle to jump over. I guess the juice is worth the squeeze.
Yeah. I feel like I could get it down about half that, but I don't. There's people on Board Game Geek like, I could set it up in 10 minutes. And I'm like, I think you're lying. I don't think that's possible. There's just a lot. And then there's different scenarios. So you have to set up the map accordingly, and you have to match all the icons. I think once you know the icons really, really well, like if I played the game every week, maybe I could set it up a bit faster. But there's no way it's getting set up any faster than, like, you know, 30, 40 minutes.
What if they have a custom spring-loaded insert?
Oh, well, that'll do it right there. Yeah. Just press the button. Yeah. Go Gadget Voidfall. I wish, man, if this game set up faster, I would play it a lot more. So,
well, maybe this one will actually bring more people into that game, right? Like a nice introduction to it.
I hope so. And like, if there's more of the theme in it, like, because I think in Voidfall it gets lost a little bit. Like, it's all there, but like you're really focused on the mechanics. So a little bit lighter game, maybe you can feel the world that you're in a little more.
Nice. All right. What about you, Corey?
So, now, I have to admit, I don't know a ton about this game, but for whatever reason, it's been years, and I've been thinking about how I've wanted to play Clans of Caledonia. I think I heard from you guys that it's back on Kickstarter. I'm seeing now, at the time of recording, it's got 13 days to go. And this is, I mean, it's a reprint plus an expansion. It looks like there's, you know, the inserts for the box and things like that for organizational purposes. And I don't know, this one's been compared to Terra Mystica. Is that accurate?
Kind of. So it has the mechanic where everything's on your board and you take it off to place it on the main board.
Okay.
And it has like kind of the network element where you're like building networks of things, and like your proximity to other people matters. But it also has a lot of like, it's contract completion too, which is not really Terra Mystica's thing. So it's got bits of DNA from a lot of games.
Yeah. And I like the artwork obviously harkens back to some of the UVA games. It's the Clemens Franz artwork. It's very pastoral, and you know, a lot of the pieces even are the same shapes, things like that. But yeah, I mean, I've always been drawn to this one, and I don't know what it is. I think it's, you know, just the idea of sort of building out your board and building out your presence, and obviously it's a highly rated game for a good reason. So I think this is a good chance to kind of check it out. Looks relatively affordable too.
Yeah, Clans is great. This is way up there on my list. I think probably 2-3 weeks ago, you could go back and listen to me talk about it. But yeah, like I backed this one right away with the expansion. Big box is great. The little box it came in is pretty small. The more space, new modules look good. The pick up and deliver mechanic in the new map that they have looks really cool too. So it's just a really solid game. I'm really surprised he came back to it, because it always seemed like he wasn't going to.
Yeah, it's been years.
It's 6 or 7. Yeah, it's been a while.
At least. I think it was the fact that just like, kind of like White Castle, it did a lot of things other games did, but in a smaller kind of format. And I think people really appreciate it, because it's sort of table time.
Yeah. It's easy to get out. It's relatively easy to teach, and it doesn't take up a ton of space too. So, no, it's cool. So you haven't played it at all?
No, never.
Okay.
Yeah, so but I'm in. I'm going to try it.
Yeah, you should.
here's the sign from the universe.
Yeah. No, it's good. I definitely recommend, like, anybody who likes Euro games, I'm like, you probably like this game, whether you love it or not. I don't know, but it does interesting things. It doesn't overstay its welcome.
Yeah. The only thing you have to be careful of with the initial Kickstarter was some of the asymmetrical, I guess, special ability powers for some of the people in play. And I don't think they were play tested initially, or much play tested.
No, the rulebook tells you too which ones. There's like four of them that are just, the rulebook is like, these are imbalanced. Yes. Play at your own risk.
Yes. So you be careful about that when you sit down and play, because you might not have a great first play.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is that corrected in the expansion, or is it just?
I don't know. More? That's a good question. That first Kickstarter was really like, he's like, I made a game. Oh, I need stretch goals. All right, here's some more stuff.
And it
was,
oh, yeah.
That's kind of how it went.
And so, I need to shrink it so I can ship it.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've been thinking about this too. This is like a topic for an episode one day is the imbalancing games and you know, the ones where that's used effectively, because it's not always a bad thing. You know, sometimes a player with more experience playing a more difficult faction can level things out a little bit, or sometimes you just want that extra challenge. And yeah, I mean, you hear about Tapestry all the time, but it's okay. Like, it's different, you know?
Yeah. I think once you know it, it's fine. Like, if I bring the game out, I'm like, oh no, you shouldn't play as that one. You should just, here, play the Milkmaid. That one's easy. You get a lot of milk. It's easy to manage. It's one of the easier factions. It's very good. Where it's like, oh, you've played this a bunch. You pick whatever you want. Here's the hard one.
Yeah. Right. And even though that's,
There's a draft with that too, I think, right, with the game. Yeah.
It's got a draft mechanic, and you bid victory points for what you want, because the game knows that it's imbalanced. So you're like, I will take -5 victory points to have the aging whiskey faction.
Well, that's a good way to do it. And I think I've heard that in like Terra Mystica too, because of course there's the imbalance issues in that one. But even the way of you know, when you start out with a different starting victory point totaled based on the faction you choose, I always found that interesting, rather than like a detriment to the game to kind of compensate for the imbalance in roles. It's cool, you know?
Yeah, totally. It's like what Great Zimbabwe does, but in a draft format, which I think is fun.
Excellent. All right, Harrison, what about you?
I try to spend as little time as possible looking into the future of games, because I've just got so much in the present. But that being said, I've had my eyes on the Bitewing Games trio of Rainer Knizia games that's going on right now. Is it Ego, Orbit, and Silos? I've got one guy in my play group that just loves everything Rainer Knizia. He says he's got like 100 plus Rainer Knizia games alone just in his collection. So I'm interested to see how these ones play out and how they stack up to the Rainer Knizia collection. Plus, you can get a plushy Rainer Knizia in this as one of the add-ons, just for some reason, who also transforms into an alien. I don't know if you've seen this. It's absolutely wild.
I mean, I think this is certainly his renaissance, because he's been out for so long. The man's a genius on all levels. And then they were just like, but what if his games looked good and had some theme behind it? And they were like, done. And I think that started to kind of like snowball now at this point, which is great.
Yeah. He's just super prolific too. I mean, he sells his designs to everyone and anyone. I mean, there's like games that are published only in Korea that are Rainer Knizia games, which is just fascinating to me.
Yeah. No, it's crazy. Cause yeah, like if you have a catalog of 800 or 900 games, you could just be done and just keep republishing those and selling them to different people. He's like, no, I got new ideas. I got new stuff. We're going to redo this old one, but I'm going to tweak it. It's going to be great.
Yeah. They have knocked it out of the park with this design on these ones. They look awesome and enough where I think they could sell the game without even saying anything about the mechanics. It's just like so stylish, but that's like, to Chris's point, it started with Ra, right? Ra came out and it was like a remake of Ra, and we were thinking, okay, that was not the prettiest looking game, but that new version, oh my gosh, it's an awesome game and a fantastic design.
Yeah, beautiful.
And again, they're all like, his mechanics are just outstanding, and the variety of them is just immense. So this little addition does a lot for his collection. And again, these days more than ever, since games have been so deluxified, it is much harder. And I've heard this from so many just general gamers out there. Like when you go to a meetup or you go to a conference or a game night, and you're like, hey, I have this great game. And it's 10, 15 years old. And they're like, I have this game that's 10 to 15 years old, but it looks pretty. And that'll get table time. Like, people will play that, sadly. Because, you know, when we started out, we were playing games that were relatively like, they were spreadsheets. Let's just say it. They were spreadsheets.
For lack of a better term.
Very beige, very beige. Very beige, very green beige, you know, like that color palette was everywhere. It must have been the cheapest ink that they could produce out there. And yeah, and now everything's colorful and bright. So,
and now Brass Birmingham's number one on Board Game Geek, whereas that was one of the ugliest games that you could play.
And imagine if it never got that upgrade, that again, for a lot of people, that gem would have been missed by everybody out there.
Yeah.
So yeah. It's good to see. All right. Well, a game on Kickstarter that I am following, because my number one game of all time for this year was Hegemony. I really love the idea of this massive epic, you know, story. I wouldn't say like it's not necessarily like Clash of the Titans, but it is Clash of the Titans in a realistic political way without any kind of direct politics. It's all about the different social economic classes. You got the government, you got the capitalist, you got the working class, and you have the middle class, and they all play differently, and they have different win conditions as far as gaining victory points are concerned. And that was just such a massive impact. Like, they had done something big and awesome at the table. It kind of, it felt a little bit like Twilight Struggle or 1960s the presidential race, but it was something that four people could play together. And again, depending on your personality or your play style, you could play a different faction and have a different game experience. So this game from them was announced pretty early on, and they were like, this is going to change everything. And it's called World Order. It's on Kickstarter now, and this will back on Thursday, December 5th 2024. And this is another multi-use card game, but it's not Hegemony whatsoever, although there are four different factions, because it's 2010 and this is about the World Order, of course. So you have the United States, you have China, you have Russia, and you have the European Union all jockeying for power in this area influence control game. So basically what the game comes down to is you're dealing with a number of the different aspects of geopolitical play. You have your military, you have your trade, you have your diplomacy going throughout the game, and you have to work with and manage everyone at the table at the same time. So it does have some hegemony kind of aspects to it. But the economic, military, diplomatic, and domestic challenges come along with each country having certain values that their country kind of like brings to the table. And that's where the fun kind of comes into play. So it's not a big economic game. It's more of that area control game, but it's more of the deck building aspect to this that really brings it out. So I'm really excited. It looks like a really dynamic, smaller version, again, like Revenant, Anthony, where you're not playing this massive big game with all these rule sets. It's just kind of more of a straightforward thing. And the ability to make your own deck, to deck build your way to victory is always fun, because deck building. So deck building, and then action selection, and then area control. By the end of the game, it's going to look a little more military, a little more like troops on the map kind of situation. But it really does have a lot of that kind of trade and economic growth and challenge with the other countries.
It's interesting. Yeah, like hegemony is very abstracted, right? There's the government, but it's not a government. Whereas this is very specific governments.
And the game's relatively inexpensive, I guess, for a Kickstarter game. It's about $58 US, although there is the plastic packs for it, which raises the price a little bit, but not too much. It's, again, all of the stretch goals go to everyone included here. Again, if you want the plastic and if you want the metal coins, then you're talking $132 US, which is obviously a leap. And from their production level, I don't, like with Hegemony coming out, I don't think you really need it. And this is nice to have, but again, I don't think you need it. So it might be a really relatively inexpensive, nice, crunchy game to get to the table.
Save big on your Thanksgiving feast, all in the Kroger app. Buy two, get three free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up with your card. Then get a juicy frozen grade A Kroger turkey for 49 cents a pound, limit one with a $25 additional purchase with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today.
Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
All right, well, that's all our acquisition store disorders for us this week. Now to our At the Tables. All right, our At the Tables this week, we'll let you know if these games are a buy and you should run out and pick those games up, if those games are a play and you should sit down and play them, if those games are a dodge and you should avoid them, or in fact, those games are the dreaded burn, and just like the World Order, it should burn down because, you know, reasons, things like that. So, Anthony, what'd you play this week?
All right. So I actually, what I did is I put up a poll in the Discord. So for those of you who are interested, we have a Discord channel that is available to our backers on Patreon at any level. So throw in a dollar, you get access to the Discord. And we had not, again, reviewed any games in like 3 months. So I was like, hey, these are all the games that I've played in the last 3 months that might be worth reviewing. You tell me what to review. And the votes came in and people wanted to hear about Civolution. So this is the new Stefan Feld game. Corey, Harrison, you guys play any Stefan Feld games?
Oh, yeah.
All right.
I want to hear about this one, so
yeah, let it rip. Curious.
All right. So this is Stefan Feld's, it's a civilization game, but I'm going to put that in quotes, those of you who can't see it, which is most people. Because it's a civilization theme. Like, we keep seeing this a lot with, like, Euro games. Like, it's a Civ game! Like, kind of. We're missing a lot of pieces of the Civ part. And a big part of that is it's not even really a civilization game. The theme of it is you are taking an exam in this cosmic school in civilization design. So you are designing a civilization, which includes, like, the features of the creatures and people in the civilization. You're really playing as God, or a god, some kind of god, deity figure, building a thing. So, like, think of, like, the old game, like, Black and White, the PC game, where you're playing as God and going around and knocking stuff down. It's kind of like that, but a Euro, right? So
better controls, too.
Yeah. less Peter Molyneux, more Stefan Feld. So this game is, it's a lot. We'll start with that. It's his heaviest game as listed on Board Game Geek. I don't even think the game is particularly heavy. I just think it's a lot of stuff. Like, a good analogy would be when, like, Uwe Rosenberg was like, I made Agricola and I made Le Havre and Glass Road, and now here's a Feast for Odin with like 400 options. It's all that stuff, but, like, now when you go to place a worker, you have 70 things you could do. Figure it out, right? It's a huge smorgasbord. But then on top of that, because it's Stefan Feld, you have dice. So It's got the dice mechanic of, like, Castles of Burgundy, where you have these dice workers and you roll them, and then there are columns in your personal player mat of actions that correspond to a combination of two dice. So there are 15 possible actions, ranging from like a 1-1 up to a 6-5. And you have to spend dice that match those numbers to be able to take that action. So you start the game with one of each die. You don't roll them, but in future turns, once you, like, reset, what you'll do, like, I don't know, somewhere between like 12 and 15 times during the game, you will roll all those dice and they will be what they are. So I had one round where I rolled 5 fives, and that was terrible because I couldn't really do much with that. There are ways to mitigate that a little bit. It's, again, it's similar to Castles of Burgundy in that sense. Like, if you can't do anything, you spend the stuff, you get the workers. In this case, they're called ideas that let you change the pips. There's also an option to get these focused things that basically act as wild dice, which is super important later. And so early in the game, it's not that restrictive, because early on it is literally just a sandbox of stuff, right? You have a blank map. You have like two people out there, two tribes, I call them. You don't have any cards in play. You have a hand of five to choose from, but there's none in play. Like, you haven't done anything yet. And there's a lot of paths you can take because it's Stefan Feld. So, you know, point salad all the day. But later in the game, you're going to have moved yourself in a direction, right? You're going to be like, I'm really focused on getting stuff on the map and having a food engine to make sure I can feed everybody, and generating resources to be able to build these things. And if you don't get the dice you need, then you end up using actions to do other things. And so you need to know that in advance, because it is a pretty sprawling Euro that takes a long time. I would say probably 45 minutes to an hour per person, especially for its play, because there are again, 16 actions you can take off of 15 tiles, plus five unique decks of cards that you're drawing from to play. There's a million things you can do. And like, this game is just analysis paralysis the game. And all of that means that you can't really plan it out. You can't really know what you're going to do until you've played through it a little bit. And you really can't organize all that until you have a sense of what all is available. And at the end of the day, it also matters what dice you roll. So there's, you know, if you're used to like a Lacerda game or, you know, a Mind Clash game where everything's deterministic and it's all on the board and you can map it out and solve it. Like I talk about Voidfall. That's a game where I can look at the entire round and make a plan for the whole round and then do all those things in that order and see if it worked. This is not that, because you have to work with the dice that you're given and kind of manipulate accordingly. That all said, I think it's a pretty interesting puzzle to solve. Like, if you don't mind that little bit of luck, which you can mitigate in a lot of ways, there are a lot of interesting things here you can do, right? So one interesting thing you have is the way you build your tableau. So you have this like tiered system on your player board, and you play cards into columns. There are 9 available columns. Each of the columns starts at a different tier, and each tier will score differently. And you place those things in those columns. Like, how the mechanics of all that's less important than the fact that like you can manipulate and manage how you place cards and what order you play them and what suit you play them in and what goals you complete and what income tiles you take and what achievements you get to maximize points that you're going to get at the end of the game, but also to give you abilities and upgrades throughout the game. So that's a pretty cool thing. I like that quite a bit. Some of the mechanics are a little less interesting. Like, I think the building mechanic is a little half-baked. Like, there's a cool thing with the boat, but you only get 2 boats, and then they're kind of stuck out there. The houses go out, but you only get a handful of them. They don't really do anything. The settlements are hard to get out, but you have to then do the exploration to find the building tiles to place them on. So I wasn't super thrilled with that. But I really do enjoy the tableau element of it. And then the action mechanics, like once you wrap your brain around what all the actions are, which again took like half the game, the first play. But once you do that, they're all there, you know, it all makes sense where you're like, I want to build something. Which action is that? That's right. It's 6-4. I'm going to take that action. I'm going to build. So overall, Civolution, and again, this is a game because it has a trillion things in it to do. Could talk about it for 45 minutes, which I'm not going to do because we have guests. I don't want to take up your whole evening. But it simultaneously feels exactly like a Stefan Feld game in that it just kind of goes, bleh. Here's like 30 things you can do. Have fun. And you're going to score in like these 13 different ways. But it also feels kind of unique in that he really just like threw everything down there. Where his games, even the point salady games, they do feel a little more constrained, right? They're not like this Mind Clash explosion of ideas. This one kind of feels a little bit like an explosion of ideas. He's like, okay, and then this, and then this, and then this, and then this. So it's fun. I like it. Is it great? I don't think so. It's a play for me. It's not bad. I don't dislike it. I'm still going to keep it. I'm going to enjoy playing it. But I would find it difficult to recommend people like run out and pick up this $100 game. Because it's messy in a lot of ways. It's very long. It's difficult to teach. My copy, and this is not related to the review, but I will say this. My copy in the first US printing had, I think, about 50 cards were in German. So that wasn't great. I've been learning German, so I kind of actually fought my way through it and figured out what the cards said. But the other people playing, not so thrilled. We had to look them up. So that's not a cool thing. So just keep an eye out for like which printing you're getting and maybe wait until they upgrade that. I have not heard back yet if I'm getting replacements, so we'll see. But as a whole, I think it's a really interesting experiment. It's Stefan Feld just doing whatever the heck he wants to do in a game, which I think is a cool thing. It's always fun to see someone just go crazy. Does it 100% work? No, but a lot of the things that work that are done do work, and they are interesting and fascinating in unique ways. So I would be interested to see if pieces of this come out and go into other games, or if we see like a more condensed version of this, or like a cleaned up version or an expansion maybe that kind of coordinates some of these things or makes the buildings more interesting or whatever that might look like. But yeah, I don't know. Civolution, it's good. It's interesting. It's fun. It's a mess. That kind of falls into that weird in-between category for me.
Feld's games, when they're great, is managing that chaos.
Yeah.
And typically, especially when you have dice in a game like you do here, being able to work towards mitigating your dice, because typically in a Feld, you really want to plan your actions and they have to be planned in advance so that you can get the things you need to do, the things that you want to do later on. And if that's not streamlined, like the brilliance of Stefan Feld is things just run smoothly, even though, again, everything's exploding. So this is slightly concerning because...
Yeah, it's not streamlined at all. It's really not. It is a sandbox. You can do a lot of things in a lot of different ways. And like I said at the beginning of the review, it really, it eventually you end up in a channel that's more streamlined. But then at that point, you can't always do what you want to do.
Mm.
And so the game doesn't really reward you for being super tactical late. It just forces you to do like, okay, I got to take this action. I got to use an action to just get extra ideas so that I can change the pips on my die.
Mm.
Like, that's not fun. That was my whole turn. And I always hate that in Castles of Burgundy. I try to avoid it. But in this game, you're just going to have to do it sometimes. Because if you don't do it, you won't be able to take the actions you need. You do eventually get to the point where you're like, I know what my next five actions need to be. But you don't always know what your dice are going to be to do them. And that's... it's fine. But if you hate that, don't play this. Because like, that's what it is.
Explosion of ideas can be a selling point for some people. And it's exciting to hear. But if it's not narrowed down from the get-go, I worry about the first game I play with people. And with a game like this, I feel like I would be showing it to people more often than I'd be playing it with a repeat crowd. And we're looking at, what, you know, probably 3 hours for a three-player game learning is what I'm getting from the description. Is that accurate?
I think longer, probably.
Yeah, even. Okay.
And really, the reason why is, like, it's the rule book, or maybe it was a video set, but it was like, you're going to play about 30 to 40 turns in the game. So it's on par with like a Castles of Burgundy.
Yeah.
But unlike Castles of Burgundy, where you have like maybe 6 or 7 options, and this one, you at any given time have like 15 to 20 options. And then the dice mitigation on top of that, and you have more dice to choose from. So it's just people take their turns really slowly, which is not their fault because there's just so many things you could do. Like when I learned it, I played it by myself and I was like, it took like 2 hours to like two hand it. And I was like, that's not good. This is a bad sign. And then playing with other people, it was a bit longer than that. So
that makes it hard to onboard, doesn't it?
Yeah.
But and that's fine. Some games can do that really effectively where you're looking at all the options at once, but you are really limited in what you can actually access to those. And there's some good, you know, parts to like the sandbox where it's all open to you. You can really explore different paths, but that's tricky.
Yeah, and I think the way it tries to handle it is it gives you the hand of five cards at the start. So each card you have will have like requirements on how to play it. So you're like, okay, I need to get these resources, I need to get these features, I need to get these buildings out. But even then, it's like, okay, now I have 9 options instead of 15. What to start with? Yeah. It's still a lot. Like those first, like the whole first round, really, you're just like, what am I doing? It's stressful.
To me, the magic of Feld, and I'm a big fan of Castles of Burgundy and Marrakesh. I love Marrakesh. But both those games have this element of like, at some point I kind of get narrowed down to, I know exactly what I'm looking for. And when it shows up, you get this like instant hit of dopamine. It's like, yes, that's the four cow. I need the four cow and I put that in my duchy. So that way, like you start with all these options at first, but actually you're kind of focusing yourself in as you make those decisions. So that's done so elegantly in Castles of Burgundy. I got to give it credit for that.
Yeah, totally. I think I agree. And I think this game has that, just not that elegant. Again, it's messy.
Yeah.
All right. What about you, Corey? What did you play this week?
I got a pretty short one because I think there's not a whole lot to say about this one at this point. But just yesterday, Mindbug came out on digital.
Oh.
And I should say yesterday from today, Friday, November 15th. So the 14th. And I've never played this game, but I've heard a lot about it and I've heard a lot of favorable reviews for it. And I've been like really skeptical because the whole gimmick here is this is a head-to-head dueling card game from Richard Garfield, which, you know, going back, I talked about Magic, right? This is obviously obvious comparisons to Magic with this one. But the big gimmick is that at any point in the game, you have two opportunities to steal a card that your opponent is playing. And like that to me just sounded so whack that I couldn't believe it would possibly work. But it does. It works so well in this game because both players' deck is supplied by the same set of curated cards. And like every card has its foils. Every card has its combos within that set. And so it's a game where there's like this bluffing element that's all new to it, because you want to get your opponent to snag the cards that you don't really want, but still look good to them. They look juicy to them. And there's some really interesting setups you can do where you play a card and your opponent is darned if they do, darned if they don't. if you get to play it, you kill all their creatures. If they steal it from you, they don't hit anything. And so it's kind of like a, I don't know, it's a really interesting kind of push and pull in the game. And I had an awful lot of fun playing it. Very easy to learn, very simplistic as far as, you know, a head-to-head card game goes. There's no mana cost for anything. You're either playing a card or attacking with cards. But there's just like some great depth to it as far as, you know, you feel like you really truly have control of your results. You know, you're not left to the variability to kind of determine the winner. That said, the theming on it, it has me floored. I don't understand what this game is doing as far as like the art style and the environment we're in. The app, you're like these, you know, tentacly aliens in a spaceship, and you're playing like these. I mean, one of the cards is like actually a crab that has like a cow head. It's like it's okay. All over the place, man. I don't know what universe this is in or what they're trying to describe with this stuff, but it's very whimsical, very fun. And just, I mean, and there's like toasters. I don't know. I don't know what's happening. But yeah, it's definitely a play for me. I think the way that the app is headed, it seems like it's kind of hinting at they're aiming for this microtransaction path to a game that is otherwise very like, oh, you buy the box, you have the box, you can play it with a friend anytime, you're done, right? And of course, there's expansions, but I mean, already in the first go, it's like free to download. I wanted to play it with a friend of mine to kind of try it out, and I was like, oh, okay, I gotta spend $10 on a box now, and it's all digital cards, so. That was a little bit of a turnoff, but I did have a lot of fun with it. And I think you can get a lot of, you get a good idea of what it's going to do for you at the free level before you even are asked to pay any money towards it.
It's cool to hear there's an app for that. That's a fun game. It's always annoying though, when you find like, oh, it's digital. Like the pricing might be funky. Like, ah, come on. So that's,
yeah, it definitely is.
Yeah. I don't think they've, at least in the tabletop industry, have really come around to like what they should be charging for a tabletop game on an app. Like it could be free. It could be, we've talked about this, I think not too long ago, where it was like Dominion, I think was $90 for the expansions. And I think Unmatched was on Steam. And that was, what was that? Over 100.
150 or something crazy.
Yeah. And it's just, it's kind of odd because it doesn't sync very well with what, you know, the AAA companies kind of do with their video games, where you're paying $60, $70, $80 or $90 for a game and get DLC that goes along with it. So,
yeah,
you know.
Right. And don't get me wrong. I don't expect it to be free. I mean, this is someone's creation. There's a lot of work that went into this. I guess I just kind of want to put out there for those that are curious about this. There's like season pass content and stuff. It feels very like what video games are in 2024. Mm-hmm. And if you want to avoid that, I think the answer is just, you know, play the paper copy of it, right? That's out there already, and it's already affordable, and I think it's a great little game, so I'm curious to check that out.
Yeah, no, it's a shame because we want more people to play tabletop games, and this certainly helps with that. It just, like you said, should have an initial, like either the free version or the base version. Should have everything that you need to kind of play a full thing without having to kind of dive too deep into like microtransactions, give or take.
Yeah.
All right, Harrison, what about you this week?
Well, this week I finally got my copy of Slay the Spire, the board game. Ooh. They just did a reprint, I think, that came out in the last couple weeks or hit shelves rather. And I got a chance to try it once with my gaming group. Somebody brought it and I was like, oh sure, but I hear a lot of good things, but it's just one of those poor translations of a video game to a board game. No, it's not true at all. I had a blast, so put my name on the waiting list and picked it up, and right before busting it out by myself and playing it solo, I thought, you know what, my good friend that lives 5 minutes away, he likes this game, let's play it together. And that was the best decision I ever made. Because the key difference between Slay the Spire, the digital game, you know, that now classic deck building roguelite video game, and the tabletop version is that you are playing with two people. And the loss condition is if any player is defeated, not just you. And that just that changes the entire dynamic of how you evaluate your own deck and how you evaluate the actions that you take on your turn. Because now you're not only worried about defending yourself and keeping yourself alive, but you got this buddy that you want to make sure is also doing well and performing well and gets the right cards. And so I mean, for I don't know how many people don't know what Slay the Spire is, but the board game, you are basically trying to dungeon crawl through this event or scenario based map, and each little encounter or pip on the map is a battle with some guys or a market for you to buy and improve your deck. It's just been a really, really cool experience. We've only played two games of it so far, but the hooks are already in. That being said, I would probably call this a play first, just because I think it is really for those who have one foot in the video game door in that Slay the Spire and one foot in the board game door. I've only played it with people who are big video game fans already, and I don't know how reliably that's going to translate to someone who doesn't have experience with that. Plus, it's over $100, another big thing. There's lots in there. You're going to look at a good hour and a half of sleeving cards before you can even play. Game comes with 450 sleeves, and even in the non-collector's edition, because you've got to sleeve every card because they're all double-sided. So it is a little bit of an investment in total.
Yeah, this game is so fascinating. I've had the same thought of, like, I love it. I think it's brilliant. But I haven't played it with anybody yet who hasn't played the video game. Mm-hmm. So I keep wondering, I'm like, how would this go over with somebody who just doesn't play this video game or hasn't played any video, like, is just not a digital person. I gotta find someone.
I'm really trying to get my spouse to play with me, because her video games are Breath of the Wild and Skyrim and Persona 5. That's it. She plays those three games over and over and over, and she doesn't touch anything. She thinks Slay the Spire is just like, how can you play that? It looks so weird. So saying, yeah, hey, you like board games, let's play a board game together. It's don't look at the title, Slay the Spire. She's just like, no, why did you spend over $100 on that?
It's really good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry.
No, I've just had the same thought with my son. I'm like, he plays a ton of video games, but he doesn't play anything that he considers quote unquote boring. Really, if you can't shoot somebody, why am I playing the game? But he, I was like, I need to get someone in front of it. I'm with you. Like, is this good for somebody who doesn't already know the system and the world of the mechanics?
I would be inclined to think it is. I mean, it's very straightforward. It though it's relatable to the video game in the sense that you can just say, oh, you know, you've played the video game, you know how to play this already. Like, here's some of the small changes. It's also like relatable to all the deck builders that are out there. If you've got experience in Star Realms or Hero Realms or something, especially, it's like, yeah, I mean, we're doing this a little differently, but here we go.
Yeah, but at the same time, you're not playing this like a traditional deck builder where there's a shared market of cards and you kind of know what you're getting into ahead of time. All the card rewards, any opportunity you get to add to your cards to your deck, is just three cards from a deck of about, I don't know, 100. Or so upgrades. So you really don't have a good idea of what you're going to jump into. It's a little bit more difficult to plan ahead, which I think a lot of modern deck builders try to let you do.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah. Yeah. And it, like, if you play the video game, you know what's coming, because it's generally the same synergy. It's like they tweak the balance, they tweak the numbers, they tweak some of the cards, but it's all the same stuff. Because I know the first time I played with you, Chris, it was like, you were just going through and like, and this card, and this guy, and this guy, like just rattling everything off.
Yeah, you get an idea. It's a standard deck builder. You don't want to have a thinned out weak deck. And since you're getting attacked all the time, you want to be able to hit as hard as possible, as often as possible. And then just, again, it benefits you if you know the video game, because you know at least the general kind of play of the monsters that you're fighting. So but I enjoyed it a lot too. I was surprised. I didn't think that the board game was gonna live up to the video game, and it does. And it can be argued that it surpasses the video game. I don't know. That might be too much of a thing, but you know,
I'll have that co-op argument any day. Let's go.
I mean, the co-op thing is brilliant. I will say, like, that was like, if you, when they posted originally, I was like, I don't really co-op Slay the Spire. And I didn't back it. And I went and got it later when I heard that it worked, but it really is, like you said, Harrison, that's the way to do it.
The setup thing is a non-zero. I'll give it that. I mean, it takes a minute to set up. But that said, what's more important to me than the time it takes is the ability to, like, put stuff back in some kind of organized fashion. And it's actually got a pretty significant divider in there and, like, little cards that kind of show you where to find everything. So it makes it possible to, like, save your game halfway through a run and come back to it without too much trouble of, you know, getting a bunch of Ziploc bags involved and stuff like that.
Right. Yeah. It doesn't have to be a three-hour game. Split it up.
All right. Well, let me talk about what I played this week. I backed it, waited for it, was excited about it, and got to play Unconscious Mind. This is a game from Fantasia Games, probably best known for Endless Winter. And it's just massive, beautiful production. And if you're not familiar with the game, this was on GameFound. It was crowdfunded not too long ago. And it's all about Sigmund Freud in the early 1900s developing psychoanalysis. So what a lot of us think of as far as therapy has its basis on Freud being kind of the father of the therapeutic movement, along with psychoanalysis, dream interpretation. And back then, he had a lot of supporters, a lot of psychologists, a lot of medical doctors that were working alongside him to develop these theories of the unconscious mind, of this mind that drives a lot of our intentions and our behaviors. And this was all very revolutionary at the time. So Freud and his contemporaries would get together and discuss the philosophy, the psychology, and the biology behind all of this, and try to come up with theories and practical applications to help their clients with their struggles. The game itself is rather thematic, surprisingly. Now, this is my particular field. I'm a counselor. I'm working on my second doctorate in psychology. So this game really plays for me from a very thematic level. The game does have a lot of thematic elements to it, but if you're not familiar with any of Freud's work or anything about psychology or therapy, don't worry, because it's not that deeply, you know, entrenched in kind of psychoanalysis and therapeutic kind of terms. It really comes down to being a Euro game. And basically what you're doing in this Euro game is you have your individual player board and your particular psychologist. No one's playing as Freud. Freud's awesome. He's out there in Vienna doing his things. But we're all out there trying to construct ideas to come up with. Books and theories. So you have your inkwell, which is this really cool little rondel action that you move this inkwell around your own particular player board, and it allows you to activate different portions of your board that are your notes. You gain notes by going to, again, like this Wednesday club that they had all these discussions about ideas. As you go to this Wednesday club, this separate board, you're going to be picking up these very abstracted kind of little tiles that you're going to add to your own player board that are going to give you a lot of different actions to play throughout the game. So basically, you got a rondel, it's going to trigger some stuff. You want to get some tiles so that when it does trigger stuff, it triggers a lot of really cool stuff on the board. Next to your rondel and your book of ideas and theories, you're going to have an insight wheel. This insight wheel will allow you to gain insights throughout the game, and that's primarily your resource in order to treat your clients and do a number of other things in the game. This insight board is split amongst minor, moderate, and major kind of insights, and three different colors. You have your growth, your freedom, and your passion. Again, these are the thematic elements, but basically it comes down to resources that you're going to need to do in the game. And then finally, reputation is very big. So as Freud is progressing along with his theories and ideas, you want to learn from Freud and everyone at the table with their theories, and you want to also be able to show off your work as well. So you gain reputation, victory points in this game from a lot of different areas. You'll be publishing work in your treaties, producing books. And again, all of these player boards and these characters are real life psychoanalysis from back in the day. And there's the actual books that go along with it. Again, a little more theme as far as the game's concerned. And then there's coffee, because coffee is the thing that keeps everyone going, especially these people back in the day. Although, again, if you read into Freud, it might have been more cocaine than coffee. But coffee was the thing that was really helpful way back when. So basically, on your turn, is you're going to take one of your ideas and be able to play it on the meeting table action board. This allows you to choose one of the actions, whether it's building up your tiles on your board to enrich your theories, to enrich your actions, that will then allow you to treat your clients, because you're going to have a small side player board where you're going to get routine clients, and then you're going to get some clients that are going to need more. There's the higher victory points. What really is cool about it is obviously you're trying to generate therapeutic care. And at first, you have to deal with the grief. And the grief is symbolized literally here with a plastic overlay with this kind of Rorschach kind of look to it. So you have to deal with that. So you have to be able to score enough inspiration. And then you use the dreams that come along with the clients. And basically, the dreams that come along with clients are just kind of like, trade these types of inspiration into therapy points. And those therapy points relieve the grief. And then eventually you can do that again with some of the other dreams that the client's having to be able to heal that client. And by relieving the grief, by healing the client, you'll be able to gain special abilities throughout the game. You'll be able to gain end game victory points. You'll be able to show off Freud how great you are on the reputation track. And then as the game goes on, you'll be running around Vienna to get new ideas from museums and concerts and universities and a whole bunch of different places to gain special abilities and resources throughout the game. It sounds and looks very complex, but primarily it comes down to a worker placement game. You're placing your workers out on the board. You're taking the selected actions. You're taking the resources. You're applying them to your clients, or you're applying them to satisfy research requirements so that you can produce publications. And again, that produces points throughout the game. By the end of the game, whoever has the most reputation closest to Freud will gain extra bonuses for their publications and their cured clients. And then you take a look at your different clients and different scoring opportunities and see who has the most victory points. So, heavy thematic kind of feel to it for that kind of time and age. Beautiful production. The artwork is gorgeous. It's got that real Dixit looking elements as far as the dreams are concerned. And then real beautiful, sharp, realistic portrayals of the psychoanalyst at the time. It all really comes together along with a very straightforward abstract gameplay. So Unconscious Mind for me is a buy, but again, I'm a little biased because this is my field of study, but I think for everybody else, it's certainly a play.
Yeah, I had a lot of fun with this. I didn't know what I was expecting. This is not my field of study, but I really enjoyed the artwork. I think the artwork on the dream cards and the nightmare cards, fantastic. Mm-hmm. It's a really cool idea to have different art styles for different parts of the game. And just like the flow of it, like the board part felt a little tacked on-y, for me. Like, you're doing stuff there, it's important, but it just didn't feel like integral to most of what you're doing. But just in general, I felt like it flowed really interestingly, and it's a very beautiful production.
Yeah, I was really happy with the game as far as incorporating a lot of those thematic elements. I think a lot of those will probably be lost to most people because it does come down to be a very abstract Euro. Like, the theme is there and it's integrated and the game is thematic, but basically symbol plus symbol equals symbol, transform it to other symbols to heal your clients. So it's accessible in that way. So I appreciate that.
Chris, I'm curious, given that this is a game that you have a background in the field, mm-hmm. do you go into it being skeptical of like the application of terms and concepts and things like that? Or do you find it was accurate?
It's a good point, Corey. Like, they really try very hard to give us an accurate portrayal of the work that they did, the actions that they took, and their inspiration that they came from. At the same time, in modern psychology, a lot of the terminology would not be used. So you don't necessarily, in modern psychology, go to therapy and become healed, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you process things. And again, like, people have a layer of grief. Like, sure. But also, again, a lot of that terminology is a little... I try to get it very accurately for the people at the table because I think it's important to understand what that time and age was about. But I think it's still important and essential. And I think it's educational from a very historical point of view that, like, if you're going to tackle what your inner motivations are, yeah, you should think about the dreams that you have and the inspirations you have behind it and all those other things that come about. Or again, back in the day, the idea that what drives you mentally or emotionally can actually affect your health was unheard of. So it's a really great application as far as the game state's concerned. So I really enjoyed it. So if you haven't got a chance, I definitely recommend checking it out. All right, so that's everything that hit our table this week. Now on to our feature review. Our feature review this week, of course, is our friends' favorite games. So at this point, I'm going to leave it up to Corey and Harrison to let you know what your what their favorite games are. Corey?
All right. Well, I think I approach this in terms of showing off diversity in games I like to play. These aren't necessarily like my top three games by any stretch. But I mean, if you look at our shelf, we're kind of all over the place. I like interaction. I like engine builders. I like very heavy brown Euro games. We've got all of them on the shelf. And our general rule of thumb is that we need everything to fit within the Calyx. So I'm constantly removing games and trading them in for another version of that theme or that genre. But that said, I could probably make space for all three of the Matago combat games if I had to.
Oh, yeah.
So one of my favorites of all time is Kemet. And that's the first one I wanted to shout out. It's like Kemet is just such a basic structure for a combat and dudes on a map game that becomes awesome because the complexity is kind of discovered as you go on. Which, you're looking at all of these tiles that are upgrades and things for your troops and your economy and such, but you can only access so many of them. And as you kind of explore it, you sort of build up this engine that you can use to take over the map. And so in a nutshell, you're trying to control temples across the map, earn what's known as like prayer points in the game, and you spend those to purchase new upgrades and win. You get points, you win. But this one, people always say it really incentivizes combat and really incentivizes attacking. You can't really do a lot of turtling in the game because you get victory points for winning combats. You get victory points for lots of other things too, but it becomes extremely interactive because it's really pushing people to go out there and get their hands dirty. And by design, the map is like really, really compact, even though it's a large board, just by the shape of the spaces. There are these really odd, like kind of squiggly amorphous spaces that kind of connect everything within about 2 to 3 spaces from every other temple or base that other players are working out of. So I always have a lot of fun with this. I recognize that these types of combat games are not for everybody. But if you're interested in kind of exploring those types of things, seeing if it is for your group, I would recommend Kemet. There's Ankh. It has similar similarities to Kemet because it's the kind of ancient Egypt theme. And I do love those games too, but the depth and the complexity of them is something else. And I think this one's just really, really clean and clear.
Is that one you played the most recent version or going back to the old school one?
Oh, that's a good question. Yeah, I have the new version, the Blood and Sand. But I would actually recommend the original version over Blood and Sand. There's some rules tweaks that happen with Blood and Sand that are worthwhile. But you can kind of enact a lot of those without having to buy a new game. But the production quality on the original one is just so great. Like the minis are these nice little shaded, there's like an elephant and like a giant snake and stuff. And they're really well made. And everything about that game is just like, it just knocks it out of the park. So, get onto Board Game Geek and download your updated rules and you're golden.
Yeah. I think if you're going to play Troops on a Map, that is certainly the game that will force you to do that. And I mean that, and I mean that in a positive way.
Yeah. It can feel a little bit Kingmaker at the end, and I'll admit that. And and that might be part of the fun of it. I think, you know, with any of these games, if you're kind of a sore loser, I don't know if I would recommend Kemet, but those that want to do kind of more of the fun of this is the story we told with our interactions this game, I think this one does that really well.
Nice. Harrison, what about you for your first one?
Yeah. So, you know, Corey's taught me Kemet. I've played Kemet with him. I can't stand it. just wasn't for me. For the games that I picked, I lean more into my what I'm calling it my neurospicy ADHD side. I prefer lots of games, lots of different kinds of games, and I really like big Euros and crunchy things and more smaller and streamlined things. But the biggest quality that I look for in a game is getting a sense of the full experience from the start. I just play so many different games that I don't care as much for ones that require you to play three or four or five times with the same group to really get the full experience. So I think games like Kemet lean a little bit more into that, and that's why I just don't vibe with them as much. But that being said, the first one I want to shout out is from a smaller game company. It's called Panda Royale from Last Night Games. This is a 2 to 10 player basically dice chucking game, super high on luck, very, very few decision making points. And thematically, it's about dueling panda clans or battling panda clans. But mechanically, it just turns out to roll a bunch of dice, add up numbers, pick a new die, do it again. And in round one, you're rolling just a single die. And by the end of it, you've got a handful of 10 dice that you're chucking and hoping for the best. And it's such a wild, chaotic experience that I didn't think there would be anything to it, any game to it. But the moment you sit down and people start rolling dice and getting new dice, and they're like, ooh, wait, that D20, I could just get 20 points if I roll a 20, or ooh, all my red dice, they could really bite me if they go negative, but they could get really good points otherwise. There's just enough to chew on in there that people get really into it really quickly. It's a very easy, light teach. And it's been, I think every time that I've taught it, someone at the table has went and bought it the next day. It's been just that kind of infectious energy. It's a help that it can play up to 10 players too. I don't know if I mentioned this was Last Night Games. There are two brothers out of Utah, Nate and Jake Jenny, that do everything. They do all their design, all their own publishing, artwork, graphic design. They do it all themselves.
That's great looking. I've not actually heard of that game before, but it sounds really fun. Like, I love games that do this. Like, you start small and like build up over a number of rounds, but it's also like limited decision space. So
yeah. It is the closest thing that I've gotten to seeing like Cookie Clicker or an incremental game in board game form. Because it's really just low effort. You're going to get bigger numbers by the end of it. Your score is going to end in like the 300, 400, 500 range. It's okay to use a calculator. That's fine. Yeah.
That's great.
I'll mention Harrison's been talking about this one on the podcast for weeks now. So I got to play it. I mean, I think we're gonna do it tomorrow, right, Harrison?
Yeah. We've got an all day game day planned, and Panda Royale is in the bag.
Yeah.
Nice.
It's chucking dice, man. Awesome. All right, Corey, what about you?
All right, yeah, my next one is a little bit like Panda Royale, but not so much. has anyone here heard of Merv, Heart of the Silk Road?
Ooh, I love Merv.
Yeah.
Okay, I've been trying to like share this one with everyone I meet that cares about Euro games, because I feel like it's this severely underrated Euro game. There's so much good going for it. I'm not going to go into all of it right now, because it's one of those games where there's a central mechanism with mini games scattered all around the board. And there are mini games as far as like set collection and resource fulfillment and climbing tracks, of course. But the real joy of this game is the central action selection mechanic is this 5x5 grid of tiles. And each round consists of each player placing a meeple outside of either the top right, bottom, or left of that grid, and then placing a house in that column or row and activating whatever infrastructure they've built up. So it's a little bit, you know, kind of cerebral to talk about on a podcast here. You have to look at a picture of it and it makes a lot of sense. Right. But if you pick an action in a row that has a lot of your houses, you're going to gain bonus resources for all of the houses that are already in that row. So that's cool, right? But here's the thing. The turn order is going to matter an awful lot because your opponents could jump in and, you know, like purely just get in your way, also build in that same row, or they could steal your infrastructure and start to use the, your setup. So with the turn structure in mind, there's this really cool like camel mechanism where you can use camels to kind of leapfrog other players' meeples. So you get to kind of take the first dib on the next round. And these camels are this kind of like, it's, I don't know, it's a really cool resource that used not only in that way, but also throughout the mini games. And you can kind of pick them up throughout each of those mini games. And so it's sort of this, I don't know, it's kind of like bribing your way to the advantage in that case. But once again, E&O tool artwork and graphic design, and that helps it a lot because it is a pretty heavy game. But there's a really nice way of finding these actions based on an icon that represents them. It's whenever you take the action on the grid, you say, okay, I'm going to match that with whatever part of the board that has that same picture and do that thing over there. And so it might take, you know, half an hour to teach, but people tend to pick it up pretty quickly and always enjoy it.
Yeah, this is a really good one. And it's one of those games that I think it got hit twice. It came out in like the summer of 2020.
Yeah.
Not a great time. Like, yeah. And also Osprey Games, which produces beautiful publications, but they just don't put a lot of marketing effort behind them. Like I find they often just kind of disappear into the ether. Because this pair, like Lopiano and you know, Tool, they had another game came out this year that I love that also just kind of fell off the map. So I agree with you. I'm glad you mentioned it. Merv is great.
Yeah, what was that second game? Because they have another one kind of in this series, and I can't remember what that's called.
It's Sankore.
Yes. Yep.
It's significantly heavier than this one.
Okay.
So it's got a bit more of a barrier to it. I liked it a lot, but it's a pretty crunchy game.
Yeah, and that's saying something because this is like a 3.5 on BGG as far as weight goes. So yeah.
Yeah, yeah. The new one, it's very elegant in how it plays, but it takes a long time to teach. I almost compared it to Civolution. I'm like, no, that's a bad comparison because that game is kind of messy, but it's but Merv is great because it is like, even though with the crunchiness, it's so elegant and simple. So
yeah.
I think I was at a convention and I had seen Sankore out there and I didn't know what the game was. I was like, this is beautiful. This reminds me of Merv. And I sent a picture to Anthony. I'm like, look at this game. It's beautiful. It reminds me of Merv. He's like, yeah, it's in the same series. I'm like, why haven't I heard of this? It's like sitting on the table and no one knows ever, like it. It's just, I don't know. Sad. Like you said, not getting the game out there. More people.
Well, hopefully this little plug and rant and rave about it will get out the word, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Merv will start flying off the shelves.
All right, Harrison, what about you?
All right. Well, my second game is another one that's newish in the last year, right? It was a little bit hard to get, and that is Harmonies. Oh boy, do I love Harmonies. That game is just, I cannot describe how much joy I derive from that game, but I'm going to try. So Harmonies is a tile drafting, tableau building, table building, environment building. It's a building game, right? You're collecting these little discs and arranging them on your own personal player board and trying to make an environment, a terrain, a landscape for different animals to live in. Very simple gameplay of just pick a group of three tiles, put them on your board, and then maybe pick up an animal card. And in that space, that there's just so much room for a little bit of puzzle in there, planning, and just building something cool. And it does one of my favorite things in games. It just has a look what I built at the end of the game. That's just such a cool moment to have with the whole table. The first time I played this, I was like, oh my God, I need to go pick this up. And the guy that brought it said, actually about that, it's really hard to find right now. Yeah. So yeah, that first printing was just impossible to find. And I posted about it on Facebook and I was like, oh man, I wish I could get this. And then a local friendly game store owner commented, he's like, actually, I still got one on the shelf. So I like flew over there and I was like, okay, I'm going to pick that up. So I grabbed it and got myself a copy. And now it's everywhere, which is excellent. People can go out and find that and buy it. Excellent game. 100%. Everyone, that's a buy. What's above a buy in your rating system? Is there anything above a buy? A double buy, a triple buy.
Double buy. Yeah, buy multiple copies.
Yeah.
Give them out for Christmas.
Yeah, seriously. No, it's a great Christmas gift if any of your friends or family are remotely into games.
Yeah. I really appreciate how quickly they've got this one back in print, because I had a similar experience over the summer where I was like, oh, that's really good. I would like to get this game, and I couldn't find it. But it was maybe a month later, all of a sudden, I was like, no, it's back.
Yeah, yeah. They must have been ready to pull the trigger. They, you know, as soon as they saw the initial reception, they're like, all right, go, fire it.
Yeah. Is this the type of game that you normally like the abstract building type of thing, or is it this one in particular jumped out at you?
I'm leaning more towards these now. I'm really across the board. I wish I had a better grasp on the games that I gravitate towards, because that would make my buying habits a lot more simple. But fortunately, I've got a pretty broad game group that brings a lot of variety of stuff, so I get to play a lot before I need to decide if I need to buy.
Yeah. Have you played this one online? I think it's on Board Game Arena, right?
I have not played the Board Game Arena adaptation, but my spouse tells me that it's excellent because she has taught all of her coworkers to play it. They do a team time game time at work, and they play that now.
Oh, that's great. That's perfect. Yeah.
It's weird though, because it's such a three-dimensional experience with the stacking of the tiles. And online, I've goofed up quite a few times because I lost track of how many brown discs I have stacked up for my trees.
I could see that. I had a similar experience playing Earth on there. It's you lose that third dimension. It's a little, you know, flatten it out. It's hard to visualize it.
All right, Corey, what's your last one?
All right, my third and final one, and I would be remiss not to just mention that this is kind of the way that we do the Adamantly Analog podcast, is we pick a topic and share three games that satisfy that topic each week. So I neglected to mention that in the beginning of the podcast, but here I am now. but the third one is, so this one's like squarely in the top 100. The other two a little bit off the beaten path, but I can't ignore Dune Imperium. It's like, in my opinion, it's a near perfect design. It's got, I mean, it's a Euro game, which is inherently like kind of insular of an experience. But this game does it in a way that everything kind of ties back in some respect to this combat mechanism at the end of the round. But it's not combat in the sense that like you're punishing each other for getting involved in it. It's just kind of competing for prizes, really. And so it feels more accessible to those that are combat and confrontation adverse. But there's a fun card play system as far as you don't know who's going to win until the final reveals of intrigue cards go down. And that always creates a lot of excitement and a lot of tension in a Euro game, which is like not one of the, you know, not the type of game that you'd normally be like standing up and cheering, but this one can have those moments for sure. And so there's a lot going on here. Obviously, it's based in the Dune universe. And if you're a fan of that, you would recognize a lot of the characters that you play as asymmetric roles and a lot of locations. But if you're not a fan of the Dune universe, like I wasn't, this might get you involved in it. Because after playing the game, I like started reading the books, and you know, obviously the movie came out, so I was going to probably see that anyway. But I'm a big Dune fan now because of the game, which is a lot of fun.
That's great.
Yeah.
Yeah. Have you also played the Uprising version or just the first edition?
Yeah, I figured you'd ask that. And given that I think that this one is a near perfect design, okay. I'm going to just stay away from that. You know, I don't think I need it. I've got Rise of Ix over here.
Yeah.
And
yes, yes.
And, you know, it's like, I don't want to mess with it. I love this game.
No, that's fantastic. Yeah. I don't know that it's been intentional, but I've also not played Uprising. But at the same time, I was like, do I need to? Like, Imperium is so good. You throw Ix in there, it's like, this is such a good experience.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think you necessarily need to. I think they're both very good, and they're just slight variations of each other.
Yeah.
Yeah, I am curious, though. I have to admit. You got to know what's going on over there.
Right. I guess same question that I asked Harrison. Have you played the digital version?
Okay, so I have it. There was like a Humble Bundle a couple weeks back that had a bunch of great board games in it. And I think I've spent about 3.5 minutes doing it. But my attention span for computer games is very limited. So I got antsy.
It's good.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. It's a funny thing. Like, I think it is a very good adaptation, but at the same time, it's like such a different mind space, headspace to be in, like digital versus analog.
I will say this, though. It has a great solo mode, this game, because when you play with two players, there's an app that will run the AI opponent, which kind of gets in your way. It's kind of a race to the finish as far as points go. So I play this one alone all the time because adding a second AI opponent is really pretty seamless if you use the app. It tells you where to drop the workers and you're done. You know, just like keep moving on.
That's great. Yeah. My biggest pet peeve with solo games is when you have to run all the AI sides. So I'm like, I don't want to.
Yeah, exactly.
I just want to do stuff. Just tell me what to do. That's great.
All right, Harrison, your final game.
All right, my final one I want to shout out here is The Veil of Eternity, brought over to the U.S. from Renegade Games. Veil of Eternity is a card drafting engine building game where you are assembling teams of monsters from five different types or factions into a little tableau in front of yourself and then firing off their powers and creating little combos and racing to, I think it's 60 points in the game. Yeah, 60 points. And it scratches that itch that I didn't know I still had for like Magic the Gathering type things. Like there's just a bunch of unique cards. They're all thrown into a stack. They all interact with each other. There's no such thing as a bad card in the deck. I don't know. It does so many good things for me. And the drafting is so tight. You deal out two cards per player in this like central tableau board. And then you snake draft them. So you start with first to last, then last picks again, and it goes back to first. But when you actually take your turn, you can either take those cards into your hand or you can discard them for currency. And that is just the biggest decision there that turns everything on its head for the drafting. Because now when you're drafting, you're not just thinking about the cards you want, but you want to think about the value that they're worth. And if you're thinking about, you know, their value instead of their effect, why shouldn't I take that really cool card that I know Corey's going to want, you know, because I'm not going to use it anyway. So it just adds this extra level of layer and interaction to this engine building drafting game that I just absolutely adore. Got a chance to try out the potential upcoming expansion for it, too.
Nice.
A little bit too much, I think. It was a little bit over too much for me, but I think the base game is just such a good little engine and provides what I wanted from Seasons, but in a much smaller package, much more time manageable package.
Yeah. Seasons, that's a throwback.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was one of the first ones that got me into the board games. And boy, was I in over my head when I played that.
Yeah, I think a lot of people were like, "Ooh, this is a pretty game." Like, wait, what am I doing?
Yes. Chunky dice do what?
That's great.
Some of the best dice in that game. Yeah, this is a great game. And it's what's really fun about it, too, is you can build a really slow burn engine and just acquire points as the game goes on. But there's then there's a lot of like wild swings where just cards come up and like it lets you discard cards and score a lot of points or match your tableau and blow some points up or even get discounts early on if you get lucky and get the right cards. So a lot of fun strategies with that game.
Yeah. And it all feels very tactical, too, because everything's just flipping up in a draft. And, you know, you may get really unlucky and the perfect card for your build comes out, you know, right after you get first pick and, and someone's going to snipe it from you. But I mean, it's going to happen to everybody at least once in the game.
Oh, absolutely. For sure.
Yeah. And it's pretty.
Oh, it's very pretty.
Very
game.
Pretty. And it comes with a useless cardboard cutout. There's just a lot of cardboard dragon standy in there for no reason. This is now the third game that I think that I've seen do that. I think, was it Clank in Space had a cat standy in it?
Yeah.
Mr. Whiskers cat. And I'll say that the first player marker in Altiplano is very useless. It does not stand up.
Oh, yeah, that llama.
The llama.
Yeah. The alpaca.
Alpaca, sorry.
Yeah.
I always say llama. That's a good call.
Yep.
Games need to really start implementing the like wearable first player markers, like maybe a medallion or like a crown or something. I think it'd just be way more fun.
The slap bracelet from Dinosaur Island.
Yeah. That's a good one. Yep.
Yeah.
Perfect.
All right. Well, thank you guys so much for joining us here this week. Where can everybody find you?
Oh my gosh. Thank you for having us. This is a dream. People can find us on all the podcast players most of the podcast players. I think we're on Apple Music, Amazon Music, Spotify, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So I'm not going to tell you guys how to use a search engine. Everybody knows that by now. It's 2024. But if you want to head over to linktree.com/adamantlyanalog. Now, this is a weird one. linktr.ee/adamantlyanalog. You'll have your choice of your favorite ones. But yeah, we'd appreciate a listen. We're relatively new to doing this. We're only, like I said, 25 episodes in, but we release every Monday at 5 a.m.
Ooh, nice and early.
Yeah.
Yeah. We'll be a couple more years before we catch up to, the 500, but you know, we're working at it.
Just a couple. Just
like 4 or 5 a week. You'll get there. It's all
good. Yeah, exactly. We got time for that.
Yeah. Well, it's been awesome, guys. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you so much for having us. We love this opportunity. This is great.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much, Ken. And thank you, everyone, for joining us here this week. Until next time, this is Chris.
This is Anthony.
This is Corey.
And this is Harrison.
And we'll save you all a seat at the table. Take care, everyone.
Gear Patrol just called their ISO-certified dive watch the best sub-$500 dive watch, full stop. And their ceramic watch material almost magical. The Wall Street Journal called them iconoclastic cool, potentially redefining the industry itself. Who are we talking about? It's Movement. And they're leveling up your gift-giving with the biggest deals of the holiday season and the sleekest watches around. Shop 30 to 60% off Movement's variety of designs, colorways, and functionalities. From the thinnest automatic dress watch under $500 to waterproof guarantee adventure-ready sport watches to rare ceramics, Movement's got options for everyone on your list. Whether you're gifting for family, friends, or yourself, be the good gifter this year with Movement's huge site-wide holiday sales and enjoy the usual fast and free shipping. Shop 30 to 60% off now at movement.com. That's MVMT.com.
Save big on your Thanksgiving feast, all in the Kroger app. Buy 2, get 3 free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up with your card. Then get a juicy frozen grade A Kroger turkey for 49 cents a pound, limit one with a $25 additional purchase with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.